Can we actually take it that everyone has had something and then also go back to our business? Thank you very much for this break, because we now can find a way forward. Can I make a proposal, honorable members, that we allow the department to deal with the matter, and before we finish our business, they will actually bring something to us in terms of the compliance requirement, because we must ensure that the minister complies with the court judgment through the implementation of whatever. So can I propose, therefore, that we move to the presentation while they find time to be on the other hand, working with their head office and the minister to be able to ensure that their compliance is reported to us as well. So with that, I will ask the acting DG to shelve the issue that was on the table and then deal with the presentation. Honorable Mayor Euster.
Honorable Chairperson, I quickly want to make a comment on the presentation that we are about to receive. And if I'm out of order, and if I am considered to be extremely rude, then you must please excuse me. But I, for one, was very excited about this presentation, and I was really looking forward to it because I think it deals with a crucial matter. But as I'm sitting here, I am extremely irritated, and I'm extremely disappointed in the quality of this presentation. I think most of us did receive it and already had a look at it. Because I don't understand why we have to sit here for another 2 hours to listen to why we have to universalize the old age grant and why we have to universalize the child grant. Because every one of us that sits here already know that. We know it has to be universalized. We know the child grant has to be universalized. We know the old age grant has to be universalized. This presentation is so superficial. It doesn't deal with what is the important issues. The important issue is how much is it going to cost and where are we going to find the money? That is what we should be debating.
Honorable Minister, can I request that I make an intervention? We have not presented, the report has not been presented, but the documentation has been forwarded to us. What you're actually doing now is that you are already making an intervention on the report that has not been presented yet. So when they make their presentation, it is upon us, because I think what they suppose also to do is the purpose of them bringing this report forward and the background to it. But it doesn't mean you are going to be read page by page. So I think as a chair, I sit here very, very clear as to how the report is going to be presented. But this is a document, detailed document, for you to read, so that when we come to this committee, we deal with issues that no one is not going to understand why such issues. If we're going to cost, we're going to cost because why? If we are going to do it, a universalization, what is the background? I think justifiable, this document is information upon which the department is going to present to us what, as a result of what is in the document, what is it that they are going to do? Then we will ask questions. So that time will come. Can you continue?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members. I've already started with the background regarding the presentation that we are about to make. I have my colleagues that are hands-on in terms of this process. As I indicated, that we've done a lot of consultations, and we are doing our best to ensure that we align ourselves with the international instruments in terms of ILO and other instruments around the issues of social security. I can also assure you, Chairperson, that what also assists us is the issue around the Constitution as well as the NDP on the issues of comprehensive social security. We'd highlight even the pillars that are there and the challenges that are there in order for the committee to have to contextualize this work that is being done. I did indicate, Chairperson, that we've done a lot of consultation with the different sectors, business, communities, as well as labor, NEDLAC, and so on. The team will then cover all those issues. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the lastly, Chairperson, I must indicate that as part of the government's outcomes, this matter is part of outcome 13, sub-outcome 4, that we need to ensure that we have comprehensive social security and we look into these social security reforms. So may I hand over to my colleagues. They are led by Uprenda. We do have the team of experts that are focusing on these issues. Thank you.
That, Brenda, it's going to be helpful if you do as the acting DG has done, to speak from your slides, not to really go through them, so that we get the content and what is it that you are going to do in order to meet this obligation. I can see you have gone through international experiences, how other countries have come around to deal with this matter. You have also outlined the challenges that face South Africa as South Africa in dealing with this matter. So you will be talking from your slide. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Portfolio Committee, for the opportunity to present this work. I think it's important for me to start by saying that the process of the social security reforms have just taken very, very long. Should I come to it? The process of developing and getting to some kind of finality about the comprehensive social security reforms have taken very long, and some of the reasons for that length of time that is taken and the distance that we've traveled and the distance that we still have to travel will become evident when I just start to respond to some of the issues that already were raised. So the way in which the presentation was structured was really because there has been different elements of the discussion happening at different points, and we have not had an opportunity really to look at the whole comprehensive picture of the interaction between the grants framework and the insurance bits of Social Security, we created a presentation that tries to do that. But it does not mean, Chairperson, that will take you through every little line. It was just to make sure that the paper that you have is quite comprehensive and is faithful as far as possible to the discussion paper that was tabled at NEDLAC. And you are aware that that paper that was tabled at NEDLAC was completed in 2012. So obviously there's been some distance traveled from 2012 to now. But in order to ensure that the portfolio committee is in the same page with the NEDLAC process, it's important for us then to present what is in that paper, basically what is being discussed and considered at NEDLAC, so that we're traveling on the same route. So what we had hoped to do today was take you through a very quick high-level explanation of what the landscape looks like in South Africa, what are the proposals in the 2012 paper, and then engage and address some of the concerns and questions that the portfolio committee has, because that then can feed into how DSD as a government stakeholder engages in the NEDLAC process to get to finality on the kind of route that Social Security will take in the country going forward. So some definition. The way that I was hoping to do this is to just take you through some definitions, some principles that have involved, that have informed the way that you've designed the proposals, what the context is, background, the South African approach specifically, and then also talk to what is that reform agenda that you want to do based on the gaps that have been identified in the South African landscape. So our definition comes from the ILO, the International Labour Organization. This is a very old starting point that we've started from, because it's accepted across the world by all sorts of the civil society sector, government, business, and who's the other stakeholder, community, in terms of how we look at Social Security and understand it as a collective agreement, really, across all society to ensure that we provide risk cover for all people in any particular country. But the primary thing being that framework of Social Security needs to be agreed as a national program, and that it's implemented by public institutions, so that it's not voluntary or optional things, but it's mandatory, and the whole country has a framework by which they protect communities against various risks. So this is all I'll cover on this one, but the key thing is to remember the issues around making sure that everyone in the country is covered and making sure that those specific risks that are identified, sickness, maternity, employment injury, unemployment, invalidity, old age, and death, all of these things are covered to make sure that people don't fall into poverty because of experiencing any of these risks. I won't go into the international instruments because they're quite clear. It's possible to just read them. But for South Africa, then, we have localized the Social Security proposals, firstly with our constitution. The constitution establishes Social Security as a right. It says everyone has a right to access Social Security. And the definition, the way it's framed in the constitution, includes the need for providing for those people who are unable to support themselves, but then it does not restrict government to only that. So that creates room then for where people are able to pay for Social Security, that government must create a platform by which people are able to insure themselves in the instances where they are able to pay for their cover. So the work that we're doing then is based on that constitution, but also following the Taylor Committee that was established in 2002, in 2000, they completed their work in 2002, and in that work, a primary thing that they came up with was a local conceptualization of how we as South Africans should think about Social Security. The pillar framework that they came up with is what the discussion paper has borrowed in order to identify the gaps in the different elements and then say what should be dealt with and how should the three pillars of Social Security interact. First, the part that is non-contributory, where the state finances it, which is the grants framework that you have in place. And then secondly, the contributory side, which is at present split among different departments, issues of unemployment insurance, compensation fund, road accident fund, and some gaps that are not in place as yet for retirement cover on a contributory basis. And then, of course, the voluntary side, where people have agreements with employers or with unions in order to cover themselves. But what I thought is important in terms of the insurance bit is a differentiation then between where the public sector or where there is public provision of this contributory social security and where there is private provision of it. So the primary difference is being that in a public environment, you have what is called community rating. So the contributions that people pay towards the benefits are not risk rated, which means you don't pay a higher premium on the basis that you are sicker for healthcare, and you don't pay a higher premium on the basis that you are more likely to die when you insure yourself for survivor benefits, for example. So that's what community rating is. It means everyone in the pool of contributors share the risk in the same way, and then the benefit goes to those people who need the benefit. That is how our medical schemes industry in this country is operating in that sense. Whereas in the private sector, private environment, you are risk rated as an individual. The insurance company will say, for example, if you are insuring yourself for a car, that you are young, you are a new driver, you are more likely to make accidents, therefore your contribution for the car that you want to insure might be higher than for a 50-year-old woman who, you know, those sorts of things. So that's what risk rating is about. Your contribution will be lower depending on how much more risky you are. That's the primary difference between the two. And then the other key thing is the mandate as opposed to voluntary. Obviously, in the private sector, you decide whether you want to join or not. Or the employer might decide on your behalf and say, as a condition of employment, you need to insure yourself for ABC, and we will help you to contribute. That is why a lot of employers have pension funds. It's about encouraging their employees to contribute to that. But this is not a national mandate in the sense of there being a law that requires everyone to contribute. So the mandatory one is a statutory mandate. There's a law in the country that says everyone must contribute X amount. And then the differences in underwriting then is that the government framework, the public framework is underwritten by government, so the benefits are defined in law. Whereas in the private sector, there might be limited liability. The benefits are based on what have you contributed and what is your risk profile, what is your claims experience, all of those things. Plus, taking into account, for example, if you're insuring for pensions, for example, the consideration is made of how much have you contributed and what is the cost of administering your contribution and how much interest has been earned on your benefit, and that's what you will get at the end. So if the economy has performed badly or the market has performed badly, you might find that at the end of your contribution period, you have made some losses. Whereas in a government framework, because of the underwriting, government will carry that risk. And therefore, the benefit is more likely to be guaranteed, or there'll be a guarantee of what the benefit will be, as opposed to in a private environment where that is not feasible. And then the other things are quite straightforward, statutory versus contractual rights. And then not for profit versus for profit. Those are the primary things around Pillar 2 and Pillar 3 in terms of how we conceive of the design of social security in the country. We are saying there's a place for all of these elements in the system that is being proposed. This is quite straightforward. I won't go into it. You are aware, I imagine, all of the portfolio committee members of the processes that have been undergone in terms of arriving at the 2012 paper. The primary thing about that paper is that it's a product of very many departments that have inputted into it. And that being the case, it still needed to be approved by cabinet and by government in order for it to then be hardened into a policy decision. So it was technical work done by officials in the different departments, agreed by the then IMC, and then it was supposed to get tabled. But due to various challenges, it didn't get tabled. It only got tabled now in 2017 by the Minister of Social Development at NEDLAC. The aim being to really now move the process forward so that some of those decisions can be made. But in between that period, there has been some work that has happened in refining, revising some of those proposals, and those where there wasn't a lot of contention to try and move a little bit further forward on those proposals. This I won't speak to. It's sort of it's an unpacking of the pillar framework that I was talking about, the voluntary versus mandatory versus the pillar one, which is the uniform, the basis in a way of social security where everyone needs to be covered to be protected from poverty. In terms of our landscape then, this is how we look currently. In terms of pillar one, we have all of the different grants plus social relief of distress. This is non-contributory, focusing on poverty alleviation. Pillar two is what I've been speaking about. What we have in place in terms of this monetary insurance for across the country based on a legislative mandate is the Unemployment Insurance Fund, Compensation Fund, Road Accident Fund. The two that are still missing, the ones that I've got in red, are the National Health Insurance. I imagine you are all aware of how far that work is. Currently, there's some piloting that is happening. There's a policy proposal on the table. And then the National Social Security Fund, which is meant to provide for death, disability, and retirement benefits on a contributory basis. And then the voluntary insurance is in place, regulated under the Financial Services Board. This table here, this slide, is really an indicator of the role that Social Security and taxes play in reducing inequality. It's a very important consideration. It was a very important consideration for our country in that because of the high levels of inequality in this country, it's very important that the social security system gets used to begin to bridge that gap. Because inequality also has very negative impact on economic development in the country. If you look, for example, at an example on... Should I use my mouse? I think my mouse will help us to be able to understand this very clearly. This blue slide here is for Colombia, the plain blue one there. And if you look at Colombia, in their country, they do not really have a... This is an indicator of the level of inequality in that country. It's just above 0.5. And... because they don't have any tax system, they don't have a decent tax system that is functional in the country to reduce the income inequality. They also don't have any kind of social protection, social transfers that happen in that country. So the tax system and the social transfers are not in place in the country. Therefore, the inequality between the rich and poor stays at the high level. But the country right next door to them, which is Ireland, would have had a similar level of inequality. However, once you introduce the tax system, which is close to, which has some progressivity in it, and also once you add the, you take into account the social transfers that happen via the social security program, then the inequality levels in the country reduce from that 0.5 all the way down to 0.3. And that begins to create room for the economy to grow a bit more because there's greater economic participation by a wider range of the population, as opposed to if everyone only lived on their own income, there were no transfers, and there was no social security that is in place in those countries. So in our country, because of our level of inequality, these are some of the things that we need to get better at in order to make sure that we start to tackle economic inequality in the country. I will not go to the very long details around the older person's benefits. We are all aware of the importance of that benefit and its impact on poverty alleviation in the country. However, there are some challenges in it. The primary thing being because we have different parts of it being administered in government in different ways, we then end up with inequality in the way that it's structured. For example, the Department of Social Development is responsible for the provision of the old age grant, and the National Treasury is responsible in terms of the tax program for providing a tax deduction or the tax rebates, that is the correct word, the tax rebates for older persons. Now, from the work that we have done, we found, in fact, that there is an inequality between the per capita value that's given. There's an inequality between the per capita value of the grant that's given to older persons via the social assistance program and what is given via the tax system. The effect of that is, obviously, it means older persons in the country benefit differently from the system. It's important for us, therefore, to make the provision, the state provision for old age benefits to be coherent by ensuring that what gets given via the grant framework and what gets given via the tax system does not disadvantage some people. In fact, because of those differences, there's also people who fall through the cracks in the sense that if you are above the tax, the means test for the old age grant, but you are below the tax threshold at which you can access the tax rebate, you find yourself losing out on both benefits. And we've calculated from our side that the number of people who are in that space are 850,000 people as at 2013. Of course, we have to adjust the numbers now that we are in the years have moved, but that is something that remains currently in the way in which the tax system and the social grants framework is designed. There's people who fall through the cracks, and then there's also inequity in the amounts that are given between the tax system and the old age grant framework. So this just speaks to the same thing. And then the options that are being proposed in order to tackle that, there are three different options. The first one is to universalize at age 60, so that everyone who reaches the age of 60 receives a universal old age grant. If we do that, there's a financial implication at this stage estimated at 18 billion that would need to be made available to be able to pay for this. If we universalize at a later age, at age 65, obviously then you'll be covering fewer people because there's fewer people at 65 than if you go from 60 all the way up to whatever age older persons are. So in that instance, it begins to become less expensive, it's 10 billion. And then if you universalize even later at age 75, then the cost of that becomes 2 billion. Of course, there are pros and cons of the different ways of universalizing. If you universalize, for example, at 75, you'll cover a very small proportion of the population. And there are people who, given our life expectancy, many people might not reach that age. So there will be people who will not be included because of just dying before they reach the age of 75. If you universalize at 65, it also has its pros and its cons. Similarly, the universalization at an earlier age. So this is currently what has been, this is the development of, this slide or the contents of this are not in the paper as yet. This is what Vera has done after the paper was done. That was quite a high level thing. But this is the proposal that is currently under consideration, therefore, in NEDLAC to say what is reasonable, what is affordable for the country as far as universalization is concerned. The primary thing being, of course, that you must make sure that older persons are not suffering in poverty at a stage when they are unable to work and earn an income for themselves. In addition to that, there's a very significant problem in the country of people who are unemployed and are not earning any sort of grant because there isn't a grant for people aged between 18 and 59. This is a very difficult challenge that has been discussed over and over, and there's been several interventions in government to try and tackle the problem of unemployment in the country. But we still have a problem of not being able to absorb everyone and therefore not being able to really address poverty for those people. Pardon? Is it not? Sorry.
Some people don't have certain.
Really? Yeah. I wish to apologize. I think maybe in the printing there was an error. In the emails you do. Okay.
Then
apologies.
Okay, then proceed.
All right. Okay, and then so I was speaking about the 18 to 59 gap, and then some of them, the ones who are worse off are those who are living outside of grant beneficiary households. That means there is no income coming to that household at all, and that's a very big challenge. In terms of the proposals that I made, we've done a lot of toing and froing within the interdepartmental task team, obviously because of considerations of money. How much will this thing cost? At what level do you provide it? And how do you deal with issues of incentives if people are just getting an income? How do you balance what you're giving as a grant compared to what people get as a salary? Some of those challenges have been raised in the conversations that we've had within the task team. But there wasn't a final proposal that was made around to raise various considerations to say, firstly, we need to be looking at how to phase in income support. But this has to take into account what is affordable for the country. Secondly, it's important to get further along and to be more coherent and structured in the kind of active labor market interventions that are in place in order to bring more people into the labor market. Of course, this is something that government has been seized with for very many years. We also need to find ways of ensuring that we are linking those income support that is proposed to some skills development and the expanded public works program that is in place. There are all sorts of challenges, obviously, with making sure that everyone is covered and the institutional requirements for that. However, we need to be working on a combination of these measures so that it's not just one thing that says we just give you a grant, but also even as a grant is given or some kind of income support is given, there's also some sort of active labor market policy interventions that are done to make sure that those people are supported in order to get into the labor market, also to improve the further education and training system so that more people can be skilled and be able to access the jobs that are available. We can close the skills mismatch a bit better, and also to deal with issues of youth unemployment, which is the biggest problem. The large proportion of unemployed people are under the age of 35. So these different programs reside in different departments, and the proposal is to look at ways of making them work more cohesively together so that we can have a bigger impact on those things or on the interventions that are currently in place. With respect to Pillar 2, which is the area where there's a gap, the biggest gap that has been identified there is that in this country, we are anomalous in that we don't have a mandatory pension fund system for the country. The system that is in place is the old age grant for people who do not have any income or are below the means test. And then we also have the private market, which is providing the retirement benefits via pension funds and provident funds. But there isn't a statewide or a nationwide system that is able to provide retirement, death, and disability benefits for everyone in the country. And there are challenges with the existing framework in that, firstly, there's multiple funds that are in place. Employers have different funds. Some of them have umbrella funds, but they're still employer-based. So those people who are not in an employer-employee relationship might find themselves excluded from this. And people who are working for small employers who are not part of those pension funds, they will also be excluded from that provision. So all that happens is that they can work all of their whole lives, and then when they reach retirement age, they have only the grant to look forward to. So because there's different funds in place in the country, a multiple number of funds, at present there's an estimated 2,000 funds, according to the FSB, the Financial Services Board, which means each of them have their different rules, their different product pricing structure, their different benefit designs, and all of those things result in it being difficult for someone who's outside of the employment environment or the employer-employee environment to be able to decide how to cover themselves. It also means that there are different levels of cover. There's very high administration costs, largely in part because of the different rules and different funds that are in place. Some of them are very small, so they don't have economies of scale to benefit from. So a large proportion of the cost goes into that. And then there's a different pools of investments that are being done by the different funds that are in place in order to try to provide benefits for their members. There's also issues of governance among trustees that need to be addressed, in that some of them don't have adequate skills, and therefore it's easy to have conflicts of interest. It's easy to have decisions that are not really the best decisions that could be made for the members of those pension funds and provident funds. So there are some issues that need to be addressed in terms of how that market operates, although currently it's covering quite a large chunk of the people that are working in the country. Then you have a group of people who are self-employed. And so for them, they have to just navigate that terrain and find a space to insure themselves. And it's difficult because the environment is so complex for them to be able to participate in some sort of a pension cover. Our estimation, the 4 million is actually grown now to 6 million people who are outside of that environment, even though they are working, but they are not covered in any sort of environment at present. This just speaks to the anomaly of our country. If you just, without going into the details of it, you will see that we are on, this is South Africa here. the large proportion of coverage for pension provision in this country is via the private sector. That green number is occupational schemes organized by employers or by bargaining councils that unions have set up. So this is where we are as a country compared to, this is comparing African countries. So sometimes the argument gets raised that South Africa cannot, we cannot afford this because of our low economic development, et cetera, et cetera. And this is saying even in countries of equal or even lower economic development, there is some sort of national arrangement where people are able to contribute to their pension cover. Obviously, countries in the West and Latin American countries, etc., a lot of them have these funds in place. So the proposal then in terms of dealing with that big gap is to create a mandatory fund where contributions can be made for pension, death, and disability cover. And that proposal is that the fund should be called, should just be government-sponsored, and it's a national social security fund. What it will do is require everyone who is working to make regular contributions during their salary earning years in order to make sure that when they retire or if they die or if they become disabled, there's an income for themselves and their households.
Just a minute. Members, I just want to get it from you. This is a very extensive research, and it covers a number of things. It has been presented to the stakeholder, multi-stakeholder setup at the NEDLAC. But it is also unfortunate that we're not part of that, nor did the department take us through our own process in order to be at the same level. I would want to make a proposal. A proposal that says we can engage with this part. But as I read it through last night, I could see that we are not going to be making any decision because it is too much detailed and it requires more time. But we were not part of the other stakeholders that participated in that level. Is it not, the members will actually say no, Chair. Is it not possible to have our own workshop whereby this presentation, which is so good you are making, can be entertained, and then we will decide how to handle this matter, because it's not about this portfolio committee only. It is also about, you speak about the longevity, I mean the lifespan of people, some dying earlier, some dying at very early age, etc. You talk about the poverty inequalities in our country, and then the coverage of all the South Africans because they are equal in before the law. Mine is to say health has a role to play to ensure that it prevents people from being sick, preventive and promotive healthcare systems, which is NHI. They are engaged in NHI to be in a position of preventive and promotive to ensure people don't get sick and go to the doctor all the time as we do. We get antibiotics each time we go to doctor, which is very expensive. On the other side, you've got your transport. That has to reduce the risk of injuries and people being disabled, etc. You've got all these people, you've got us as social development to promote social cohesion, good mental health, so that people are always sound. So I don't think it's drugs, etc., because life is dynamic. And then the human behavior is also an issue. How do we control people not to take drugs, not to engage in killing others, causing all these disabilities that end up at the door? I am making a straightforward proposal as to how members want us to engage with this document. I don't have any problem going through with it, but I also want to be mindful of what I can see. There are already two hands, Mayor Soletti, Mayor Madropa. Thank you so much, Chairperson, for raising that. Actually, myself, when I was looking at the document, when I received it, I think it was on Monday, somewhere around that time, I felt that for people who do not really necessarily understand where we are coming from about the process of comprehensive social security, they would not understand. There's a lot that is missing here. I'm saying that because I've done an extensive research on my paper on this subject, so it's one of the subjects that I really hold dearly. I felt that even it's very important, the historical background on the issue, which is missing here in the document. That's one thing that I identified, that it was very, very important for us to have an understanding. And also the Taylor Commission, because I'm not so sure if other members are privy to the contents of the Taylor Commission, because it's very important. It identifies some of the key issues that needed to be addressed. And now when I was reading the paper, those key issues that were identified by the Taylor Commission are not included in the document, which to me, Chairperson, when you are saying we need a workshop, I agree with you, because it's very, very important that members understand exactly what were the contents that were identified. Because now, as it is, it brings all those things that were identified by Taylor that we need to address. This does not address them. The fragmentation of the whole system, it doesn't address it. And Taylor Commission, it's on that. That's where it's really talking about this matter. So I really propose that we should be workshopped on the matter, on comprehensive social security system reforms in the country, so that we can understand. I might understand it because of what I've done, but I would really want everybody to understand. When we engage, when we come to the costing that we all dearly love, we need to know exactly where are we coming from. When we cost it, what are the implications, what will be the shortfalls, whatever that is entailed, the Chairperson. I feel strongly, Chairperson, I support your point that for me, really, when I was looking at it, I said for a person who will be seeing it, who has not had a preview of having the subject in detail, would not necessarily understand what is going. Instead, it's an abstract for a person who have not understood. When we were in college, Chairperson, I always tell people that you move from the known to the unknown. You cannot just move from the unknown, and the kids would not grasp what you want them to understand. So I'm not saying you are kids, honorable members. It's just a method that we're using, that when you impart knowledge, you need to move in that fashion. I support you, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Thanks also to the presenter, Melissa. Yeah, I think my colleague have covered me, because, you know, I was just asking, you know, we're just asking to her historical background of this thing. You know, just pick it up, you know. Also, because we were of the view, I was not part of this committee, but as a person that lives here in South Africa, I know about the commission. I was asking to say that what was the findings of the commission? What were the recommendations? So that when we come now, we are saying that the issue of funding this universal, what is the funding cost, you know, for this universal in our country? Because you presented and said you learned it outside and then you try to bring it to the country to say, how can we deal with it? But I think the chair is correct to say that let us have a workshop, you know. Have a workshop, take us into details, take the findings of the commission, because I was looking at it, I said, yo, it started in the second administration, the way it's coming. This is now the fifth administration dealing with one thing. What is the problem? Because if now we are saying that you said you have put the years to say this year it was happening, but you are just putting the headings. To me, as a new person in the committee, I'm saying, what was happening from the second term, from the second administration to the fifth administration? Actually, saying from the first, you know. You know, the way I was looking at it, yeah, 95, yeah, it's a first administration. It means to say we are not moving an inch. What are the challenges that make us to be there? Maybe when you are in the workshop, you unpack, you put the history, you put the issue of the commission to say from all these years, this is what we have been doing, you know. Because even now, the issue of the understanding of the issue of disability, how do you being determined as a disabled person, is it something that is universal that we all understand? If you are saying, I'm disabled, what is it that you have to look at? You know, all those things to us, it will assist us as kids that are in, you know, in the college now to say from the known to the unknown. I think this is what we are looking for. Chair, we support you dearly. To say that let us have a workshop on this, but being taken through to have an understanding, you must not have a dishing spoon and you give us with a teaspoon. So it will assist us to understand, to be in the equal footing. Thanks.
Then I'll acknowledge Honorable Masango. The major issue here is that this is a huge debate and it actually affects each and everyone, because even those who can afford are going to be very tired of subsidizing people who remain on a grant and also want to feed on the health system, and so on. So there's a responsibility for all sectors of the society to be on one in how to manage this process, let alone other sectors that we have actually mentioned. I was once a councillor and I knew how vocal we were as SALGA to say our own pension should be managed somewhere by an administrator far away from government. But and then... so all those matters, all those decisions that are not discussed broadly before people come to a conclusion that we are on our own, we are NUM, our matters are going to be dealt by our Provident Fund elsewhere. And at the end of the day, when things go wrong, you do want social development to come and bring that body back home and look after the family. So this, as a government, we need to be broader and actually be influenced by the previous, the current, and what the future would be. So I think it's a very interesting debate, and as you presented, the work you have done, it's not boring at all, but what it does, it provokes more thinking about how is this going to be turned around. Honorable Masango.
Thank you, Chair.
Congratulations. We have not shown results.
I'm so sorry that I have to disagree.
It's okay. You are free.
Maybe I'm not disagreeing, but I have a sort of a slightly different proposal.
Yes.
If the chairperson tells me that what she's proposing is meaning that we are now stopping the presentation, is that what you want?
No, we are actually applying opinion, various options,
okay,
how to deal with this matter.
Mm.
So you can put your proposal,
okay,
as free as possible. This is your committee.
Okay, thank you,
Chair. I acknowledge you, sir.
Okay. My proposal was going to be that we continue with the presentation, because my take is the presentation was couched in such a way that it deals with this whole issue as it relates to us, this committee. And also, even as the presentation was going on, especially at the start of the presentation, the presenter was saying to us, I'm not going to dwell much on this. I would like the members of the portfolio committee to go away and read. I would hate for us to expect everything to come from the presentation when there are references on the presentation for us to go away and read, and because that's probably what we are supposed to do in any case. So I was going to, because for me the presentation, what it has done, although I have not been part of previous presentations because I was not in this committee, it has sort of highlighted stuff that I need to go away and read about. And it is helping, even as the presentation is going on, for one to see aspects of what is going on in the country that one needs to go away and research and read and familiarize oneself with. So I am proposing that, since the presentation is here in front of us now, and it's almost halfway, if I'm not mistaken, it must go on. I really am appreciating it, and I'm
thank you.
I'm sorry okay. If the colleagues are going to kill me.
Okay. It's not a problem. We are discussing. You are free. Ntate Mabilo?
Ke a leboga modula stulo.
Ya ntate.
Sebaka se o nfileng sone gore ke bue. Chair, I think, Honorable Chair, I'm mostly covered by my two colleagues. That was going to be my approach, so I don't want to repeat what they are saying. My own understanding is that at the core of this comprehensive social security is dealing with what is our task, advancing social transformation in this country. That's the core of it. So for me, this document contains broad proposals which will have implications. But it is holistic, it is comprehensive, and there are a number of areas that need further to be explored, in my own view, and to be considered. These are the implications that are there. So, in my view, Chair, the central proposal of this document is indeed what they called the introduction of the National Social Security Fund. And it also entails that we as taxpayers, we as South Africans, will be obliged to pay an X amount, which is specified at 12%. So therefore, Chair, I think what they have given us today gives us, as members of this portfolio committee, the way forward to further engage with this document as proposed by my two comrades in terms of us, leading at and engaging broadly with it at a later stage. So I say, Chair, this is a very important document. I've just gone through. I've seen that in their comparative studies and analysis, they might have their own reasons, but I don't see the Nordic countries that are known to be the best when it comes to this kind of a task, like your Sweden, your Denmark, your Norway, your Greece, your Greenland, and all of those areas. But as I say, Chair, I'm very much in support of my two comrades, colleagues, who have made that proposal. And I think that is the only way, Chair, for us to deal robustly and comprehensively with this kind of document. We appreciate the fact that we have received it, we have interfaced with it, we have interacted with it, but I don't think, Chair, we must, in this committee, take our final conclusion on the matter. So I think, Chair, I support, in other words, I'm the third one now, supporting honorable members in relation to how we deal it. We'll come to the same end or the same conclusion, but let's give ourselves sufficient time and deal with the contentious issues that are there. I'm looking at what need further to be explored. So that's my concrete support. There's already a proposal. I support it. Thank you, Honorable Chair, for the opportunity. And I appreciate the work that you have done and the feedback that you are giving us. There's a basis for us to move forward in this task. But we are advancing social transformation in a terrain that is not determined by ourselves, but a number of factors affecting us in this case. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Honourable members, I can also argue, I understand the fact that there are options here. Option one, option two, there are pillars. But it's not easy to say this option I reject because of ABC, or this one is the best, which gives us an opportunity then to engage and interrogate issues that cause these options are placed there for us to interrogate and agree on the best one, which means we are not the only people here in South Africa as this portfolio committee. We will bring others in that particular workshop. People who are skilled, people who have worked, who will work with the department to ensure that we get the best presentations, best information. And I also believe that at some stage we, Secretariat, thought we would invite the commission, if you remember, Acting DG, the Taylor Commission, to come and present, especially after the five-day workshop they had with the department in evaluating the social policy that they came with. And we said we would like to understand their evaluation and outcomes, and because they are the ones who came with this social policy, they are the ones who evaluated it, probably made some recommendations after reflecting on what has been taking in that particular departmental workshop. And I think we are at the door for all the South Africans now as a portfolio committee to begin a process that there was a Taylor Commission, there was this social policy, there's now a concrete proposal by the ruling party that we go comprehensive, we universalize. And then for us to be able to do that, processes have been taken. That is the NADLEC engagement by all stakeholders. It has now come to us as a portfolio committee to lead a way that exposes this very important information and proposals to a decision about people's future. So I think we are in a position to say, let's adjourn this matter up until we engage with the department in order to secure a time, venue, and all the other nitty-gritties, logistics for that workshop, because it will guide us to take this process through as whatever debate, nature of debate you have in the House, because it has been Honorable Mkhosi who in her presentations, whether it's budget, speech, or whatever, has this task of ensuring that comprehensive social security comes as part of a debate. But it has not been debated solely by all political parties in the House. But we can only do that when we have been gone through the process of understanding it better and then selling it to other colleagues in the House who belong to other committees for cross-pollination. And I am sure you're talking a lot about cross-subsidization in this whole process. So I think those people who will subsidize others need to be also have their voices heard in this process about them and about others. So I fully want to thank the members for agreeing that let's postpone this matter and then shelve it for further management of the entire proposal towards universalization. It doesn't mean that some areas where the department can always come in cannot have an amendment policy in the process. For example, you speak about other children getting 18 years when they are still schooling, then you would want them to be at least receiving up until 23. You want to make an amendment. There will be always ways of managing the process while having a long-term a vision on this whole issue before it can be completed. I don't know whether the department wants to say something on what we are about to do.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. We would love to have that as the department. As you can see, the specialists who are hands-on on this work, they are here because of the passion they have on this work. So what we can do, because at some point you indicated that you'd love to have Professor Taylor sharing with us the other part in terms of the white paper, that with the secretariat we can then look into the program and ensure that it becomes integrated in such a way that she also features in our program. Because when you look into Chapter 11 of the NDP, it covers those areas of the comprehensive social security, like social protection. How do we reach the social protection floor as the country? Currently, we're not yet there. So I think if she can be part of the participants of that workshop, I think you can gain a lot in terms of this. But when you look back, the committee that was there at some point once invited her to get a report, the commission's report. But it's important that the committee that is here at this point in time also get that information and be empowered going forward. From the known, from the unknown to the unknown. Or from what you know, yes, and then you can deduce. You can. Thank you, Chairperson. We don't have a choice as officials and administrators. We will come to do that presentation. We will work with the secretariat. Thank you. My apologies. Maybe how we started the meeting.
Yes.
They are the specialists. I would say they are the specialists because they're doing wonderful work. They are the officials within the department under the branch Comprehensive Social Security. So issues of social assistance, which is where we do also grant administration, they fall under this this branch. So May I, Chairperson, request that they introduce themselves? Thank you.
Thank you, DG. I'm Brenda Sibeko. The work, the unit that I'm in, is responsible for social insurance policy, which is focusing on the contributory side of Social Security. I'm the chief director in that unit.
Good morning, everyone. Anthony Makwiramiti, from the Social Insurance Chief Directorate. I'm basically responsible for the retirement reform work to deal with the National Social Security Fund proposals for contributory arrangement to deal with retirement, disability, and death benefits. Anthony Makwiramiti.
Okay, good morning, everyone. I'm Dimaka Tsopowe. I'm responsible for disability and old age grants, and we have been working extensively on the universalization of the older persons grant, and we would like to see that be fast-tracked. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Thompson Sithole. I'm working with Dimakatso on disability and old age grants. I'm responsible for the old age grant universalization.
Morning, everyone. My name is Tlaswa Kabaloi. I'm from the same branch, Comprehensive Social Security, but within the Chief Directorate Social Assistance. We are the ones who are responsible for the all the child-related grants. Our role is basically to develop and review policy on social assistance. Thank you.
Directly interacting with the branch, because many times when you come, it's a particular presentation and we don't pay attention to specific branches. But because we were dealing directly with your branch, we are very happy to have interacted with you and to know you better. Because sometimes people think we are all about SASA, we are all about handouts, or sometimes about old age, but I do know the department is very a complex body and multifaceted and difficult to manage. So thank you very much for having you. We will be working with you towards the realization of the decision taken here, that let's converse about this. Let's be broad about it. Let's learn more about it, and then we can come to proposals to our people to say, this is how it will assist them. Thank you so much. Come again? Oh, okay. May you...
Thank you, Chairperson. May I ask that in the future presentations that we include the past, as was alluded to by the colleagues, but that we also include in the following presentations more around implementation of this? And because it can't be that it's still not in the budget, and in 2020 it's going to be 8 years, so we need to know. Because nobody is debating whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. It's a great thing. What we need to debate is how are we going to implement it and what is taking so long? And if we can have those discussions as well.
I think this is the very basis why we decided to opt for the workshop, to know more. What option are we going to cost if we have not agreed on the option? Why should we decide for others? We are only representatives here. So we represent constituencies. And then we want to go to our constituencies, tell them the story. They will advise us. So what we will do will be very, very broad. So it would be completely impossible. And I understand why it has been dragging over years. Because there are three issues. One, we were very much a different society. And we were unequal. So there were immediate, allow all the people to eat, have a plate of food every day, look after all the children, irrespective of who they are, and later on have a complete product which comes from research and experiential learning. And lastly, have a sustainable, affordable, long-term solution for our people. So I think we must also identify these initiatives from the Taylor Commission, implementation of the white, and then development of the white paper, and where we are. Because this can be traced. It's unlike someone decided and then slept in the process. Now I've been a South African, I can tell you all this process we have to go through lest we jump some of very, very important steps in our process. So this is a process issue. Let's go there, and I appreciate all inputs, and for sure the committee will be part and parcel, will be participating delegates. They will actually raise issues. For that time, when we go to debate it in the House, there will be no differences because we will have participated as MPs as delegates in that workshop and agree on possible long-term sustainable solutions for our people. Thank you very much. Can we then go back to our postponed work? So we'll be going to brief each other as to how to
thank you, honorable members. The progress report, the standing report that we are supposed to present every week. Chairperson, we have the report. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and honorable members, for your understanding that we re-look into the agenda so that we present this report now. I have the executive from SASSA, Ms. Dai Dankali, who is going to present the report. Dai, can you come this side? She has presented before some of the progress reports, is known by the committee. Thank you, Chairperson. Why?
It doesn't take that. I'm going to just talk to the reporter.
It doesn't take this
one. Do I have that?
Can
I just talk to it? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. I want to check if I can
have
long time ago, Chairperson.
A long time ago, Chair. Chair, thank you very much indeed. I will just talk to the report that is before everybody, and I do apologize again for the fact that we were not ready. This is just to provide a progress report. We have not provided the draft Constitutional Court report, and the reason for that is because we were concerned that there would be media here and there. Obviously, it can't be in the media before it has been tabled at court, but I will speak to some of the issues here. We spoke a little bit earlier this morning about the fact that since we last reported here, the Constitutional Court has appointed 10 experts. Everybody was asked to nominate experts, and the court then decided who they wanted to choose. Those experts are going to be responsible to evaluate the implementation of the grants over the 12-month period to make sure there is continuity. They also have been appointed to evaluate steps that we take or plan to take to enter into a competitive bidding process to get another service provider on board, to evaluate any steps that we take to bring the payment function in-house, so that they make sure that we stay on track with any commitments we've made there. And the experts are also required to file reports to court on a three-monthly basis, which would verify the information effectively that we provide to the courts. The names of the experts were provided to us on the 6th of June by the Constitutional Court, and the experts are Ms. Angela Bester, who's a former DG in the Department of Social Development, amongst other things, Mr. Anthony Fillett, Mr. Werner Kruhl, Dr. Jill Marcus, Mr. Tim Masela from the Reserve Bank, Mr. Mateja from CSIR, Mr. Mabuso Mtsimang, Dr. Baron Tata, who's also from CSIR and also a technical expert, Ms. Doris Chepe, and then Mr. Heinz Vierlat. Those are the 10 experts. These experts will be working with the Auditor General, who will convene them and keep them together. And the hours that the experts put in this project that they've been given will be paid for by SASSA. That was an order of the court. We're not yet sure of the number of hours or anything like that. Obviously, that is being discussed. The inaugural meeting of the panel of experts is scheduled for today, as was also said earlier, and the SASSA staff are there to brief the panel on the strategy that we've got also for the submission, just to get clarity on their terms of reference, how they will submit reports, what their project plan is, the costing, and all those kinds of things will be dealt with in this inaugural meeting, which is taking place today. Then we just wanted to refresh the memory of the committee on the commitment that SASSA has made to bring certain services in-house, even while we're in transition. There are a number of things that we will be taking responsibility for during the course of this financial year. The first being the corporate bank account, the bank account from which the big money moves, all the grant money that we want to take control of that. The direct transfers to beneficiaries who have commercial bank accounts is something that we would be able to do very, very quickly and not necessarily have to get a service provider to do that for us. The biometric identity access user management system, what we have awarded a contract for this already, and what it will do is that it will make sure that to access our mission critical systems will be biometrically done, and then that system that we put in place will be grown to also do the biometric enrollment of our beneficiaries as we go forward. And then the management of the Regulation 26A direct deductions. These are the payment of the premiums for funeral policies that already happens but is being done at this stage by CPS on our behalf. We're very busy with the bringing of this one in-house. We will be responsible for the management. And the target date for that is to have it done by September of this year, and we are on track with that one. The other big thing that we will be looking at and that we're currently busy with is to see how social grants can stimulate local economic development. And this is a really important agenda of government. How do we use pay points to stimulate local economic development and ensure that grants circulate within the local communities so that the money isn't paid in a local community and immediately takes flight into the city where it goes to be spent in the big companies and so on, and local communities don't develop. And within this current financial year, the things that we are busy is a pilot project for alternative pay points to see how we can stimulate local businesses by putting payment equipment in those local businesses to bring the people back. It's just another place where they're able to use their card to buy goods, not necessarily bring cash into those smaller businesses, because that also carries a risk. So we've got to really look at how we balance it. But we would be piloting a number of those in this current financial year, as also included in our APP. We'll also be looking at surplus and bulk food purchasing, particularly focusing on our social relief program, also the procurement of school uniforms and the distribution, and that is done in our program to stimulate and support cooperatives, where all of the school uniforms that we do distribute are actually made by cooperatives, just another way of trying to make those cooperatives sustainable. And we're bringing this into the bigger program we're doing around the whole payment and administration value chain. The other services that we will be bringing in-house, but they will come in as from 2018, not necessarily in the current year. The first one is the beneficiary payment data management, that even if we have a service provider that we have direct access to the payment data and we're able to see exactly what is happening in that space and manage it a lot more hands-on than what we currently are, where everything is has been outsourced. The biometric enrollment of beneficiaries, as I said, is something that we will bring progressively in-house as we get the capacity and the equipment in place. And then also we're wanting to take responsibility for the card issuing process. Again, that will be done progressively with whichever partner we get, so that we're really a lot more hands-on with the cards that are provided to people, with helping them to be able to do things like replace lost cards, reset pins, anything like that, that we start being a lot more involved in the management of that rather than leaving it to a third-party service provider. The big thing that we will be looking at over the period of transition is to make sure that any intellectual property of any systems that are built belongs to SASSA and belongs to government, that it doesn't sit in the hands of the private sector, which is the big risk that we currently run with the way it is done at the moment. We've also looked in a lot of detail around government-to-government collaboration, starting with the engagements with the post office, which we have presented to this committee. As you know, we had a lot of engagements with the South African Post Office. They confirmed their readiness and their capability to provide the full payment value chain. We're not so sure that that is exactly what we want, so there's still work being done. We have, though, publicly supported collaboration with the South African Post Office, subject to compliance with procurement policies and a very thorough due diligence, so that we make sure that what we do give the post office, they are able to deliver on, that we don't find ourselves as government then, as the whole of government, stuck where services can't be rendered. Other government departments that we've looked at and engaged with, the first one was the Department of Home Affairs. We know that they're responsible to confirm identity of citizens, so that is their responsibility. We need to look at an interface with them for information verification through the population register, that we're very clear that the people we have on our system are in fact citizens, do qualify for the grants. We also will be looking at the engagement with Home Affairs around the one-to-one verification of the biometric data to make sure that the person standing in front of us with the card is indeed who they say they are and they registered with Home Affairs. And then there will be a bulk interface with the national system at Home Affairs so that you were able to identify any exceptions and pull those out and deal with them on a bulk basis and not just on a one-to-one. So that's when you start looking on a one-to-many match. The card production we would be looking at, and this would be done through government printing works, but with Department of Home Affairs, because Department of Home Affairs already has the smart ID card printed through government printing works, and we're wanting to see how we can actually piggyback on that process. Other government departments that we've had engagements with and will continue to have engagements with is National Treasury, and this is for the financing, costing, procurement, and ensuring that the macroeconomic imperatives for government are complied with. With the State Security Agency, we'd be looking at all forms of state security, which includes cybersecurity, people, information management, financial security. It's the whole range that state security will partner with us on that. The Department of Small Business Development, we're looking at partnering with them specifically to see how we can utilize social grant payments to stimulate local economy and the empowerment of small businesses and cooperatives so that they actually have a sustainable model and can grow. And then CETA, for information technology, back-end technologies, as well as the storage of data. Where we are in terms of the process towards procuring a service provider, we obtained a significant amount of information through an RFI, request for information process, which we went through earlier this year. All that information has been analyzed and is being used to inform the specifications that are currently under development. Our bid specification committee has already been appointed. They're busy with drafting the terms of reference, and they have been given the time frame to conclude that by the 23rd of June. And then our bid adjudication committee will consider those terms of reference for advertising in July, and there is a time frame for the way that that would be dealt with so that we can get the service provider on board within the time frame of November, which was already announced by our minister. And then just in summary, the steps that we've taken, additional steps to comply with the court order. The proposals and the plan going forward was presented to the Interministerial Committee, which is chaired by the President. It was presented last night. There were suggestions coming from that committee, and they've been incorporated into the first report for the Constitutional Court. We are ready for that report to be filed tomorrow on the 15th of June. The due date was the 17th, but given the holidays and the weekend, it will be filed tomorrow. So it's the last working day prior to that due date. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much for the report. However, I want to raise the issue of some things that are left out. It is critical that what is called overreach, any other committee that is there cannot take the function of the portfolio committee, which is established in terms of the Constitutional Court. For example, it can't be omitted, acting DG, that the court judgment has been accepted wholly by the department, and further amendments were made in the APP in order to ensure that the portfolio committee is able to play its oversight. Because if those matters were not in the APP, there was no way they would be accommodated in the budget of SASA, because when we approved it, it was not included. There was no judgment by then. I just wanted this matter to be re-emphasized, because our new structures will always believe that they are taking over. No, this is our terrain, and we should be standing firm on this particular terrain. So I'll give to Honorable Madlopa, Honorable Bev, Honorable two members there, Honorable Mabilo, Mama Toledi will be the last one. Can we go that route?
No, thank you very much, Chair.
Did you have your hand up, Honorable Masang? Okay, that's fine. I won't jump you. Okay, so I won't.
No, thank you. Thanks, Honorable Chair. You have covered me on the amendment on the APPs, because I said this is what is this is what is not part of the report, whereas it has been done, because it assures that this particular court outcome will be implemented because it's part of this. But secondly, Chair, we want to appreciate the report that we get, and I think it's detailed without this report that was not part of this. I want to check on this panel of experts. Who is the chairperson of this panel of experts? Because we must know who's going to be a driver of this particular work. That's the question I have. The rest, Chair, I think we also appreciate that the SASA and the department, they are really taking most of the issue in-house, and also to protect the information, and also in future not to have the challenges, because everything will be in the will be part in the government, will be part of government, and not now in the private hands. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also appreciate the presentation. It's highly appreciated. I've just got two questions. The corporate bank account, which bank is being utilized? And then also there's social media going around regarding the expiry of the SASA card. Is there any communication, and how do we as members, when we get asked what is the correct way and so on, and when will this take place? Because people are worried that their cards will expire, what will happen. What is the communication channel? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much for the presentation. I just want to confirm that the presentation highlights what is in the presentation going to, or report going to the Concord, because that would be, we would be getting, if the report was around, that's what we would be getting. So I just want to confirm that these are the heads of that report, as it were, that we should expect this to be covered. And also some time ago, it was said that it was agreed, in fact, that when we get these reports, it would help to have some kind of timelining on those reports. It's nice to know that what is happening is happening, but it's also nice to know when something is completely done and this is going to be done by such and such a time, that, you know, because I did hear that two or three dates were given in the report to say this will be ready by, but for the rest of the report that of the presentation, that was not the case. So that would be also because it gives some comfort that we are within the timelines of the 31st of March 2018. Thank you, Chair.
Intervention, Honorable Mabilo.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. Mine is basically just a comment to say that I also appreciate the progress that has been done. Clearly, there's no doubt in my mind that the work of SASSA is cut out, clearly in terms of the obligations. But, Chair, that's the point that we emphasized last week that, or in the previous reports, that we have no option but to continue to play our oversight role robustly. In other words, we'll take no prisoners. And I think the immediate task that is facing SASSA is the implementation all the way until we take over. 2018 is just around the corner, 6 months. We are in June. Today is the 14th. So it's just around the corner, so we'd expect they stick to the timelines. Chair, I think the panel of experts is deeply encouraging. I've gone through that yesterday. There's no doubt, Chair, that the expertise, the integrity, the experience, and the high performance of some of the 10 members mentioned, yes, is clearly. So it clearly indicates that the SASSA cannot sleep. They must be on their toes. Chair, I'm also deeply encouraged about page 5, that slide. That has always been our contention, that SAPO in the past has was responsible for grants before the 2011 Constitutional Court, and they've got the footprint and the experience. So it's a step in the right direction. But lastly, Chair, I think an amount of about 1.3 billion that SASSA is paying, and that has always been some of us concerns to say, how then does it stimulate local economy? And how do we ensure there's inclusive participation in the financial sector? So I think that aspect of the in-house local economic development and all those range of issues raised there, the school uniform, blah, 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 is quite encouraging, Chair. We must just stick to that because the whole question of township economy is going to be critical in ensuring that we bring fundamental change to the lives of our people. And that kind of money that is circulating outside the township, Chair, as you indicate, has been huge for over years. So once we can trap that and ensure that there's local boost, it will create jobs. It will also reduce poverty and unemployment. So these are positive things, and it's a fresh approach. It's a fresh thinking that should really be commended. Unlike in the past, it was just pumping money. You don't care what happens to it. So, Chair, I think I'm deeply encouraged by this progress report, but as a committee, we will continue to play that robust oversight role. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Toilet.
Thank you very much, Person. My first question has been covered by Honourable Malopa, the issue of the chairing. But let me also welcome the report, Chairperson. And I'm really encouraged on the issue and very excited that the panel has been appointed by the court. There is nobody who is going to shout on top of their voices and say it's a cadre deployment, because every time when something goes wrong, people will say cadre deployment. At least on this one, it's not a cadre deployment, it's a court deployment, Chairperson, if there is a name like that. So I'm very much encouraged by that, and also to join Honourable Mabilo to say some of the people that are here, because we know of them, they are very good people that are experts in the different fields that are mentioned above. Chairperson, also, I think it's very important to say also the issue, it's very clear, Chair. Even if the time frames are not written as at the end of May or the 20th of May,
but from the beginning of the report, it says by the financial year. And that's exactly what the court has given them, the financial year, to make sure that we deal with everything. So I'm encouraged because it spells out that come 2018, all of those things that are in the report would have been implemented. So it makes our work easy, Chairperson, also because we already know what is it that we are going to provide oversight on. If they are saying the biometric, they would have taken it in by the end of the financial year, it makes easy for us to always say, how far are you now in taking the system, the biometric system in? So that when we get to the end of the financial year, asina langxaki besikesaba nayo ba izinto zizakwenza towards the end of the financial year. So the report really, I need to commend them that it's very straightforward. This is exactly what we are expecting from you moving forward. Every time when you come from the portfolio committee, this is what we are expecting, wanting to see that you are you moving forward. And also because we got these reports, we file them, we look at it, that in the last meeting they said this on the biometrics. Then if it's a cut and paste, we will tell you, because we do read, and we'll tell you that on this one it's a cut and paste because you said it the last time, but you are saying it exactly the same. Yes. Now, I think a chairperson would really, I do not want to get on the actual report, because remember that you can't issue out the details of what you're going to give in court. I think we had an issue that we discussed about the court, and the members know the principle that applies in terms of separation of powers. We know what principle that applies, that some of the issues, when they are sub judice, you can't necessarily have to give them over. But we are expecting that report that they have filed in court, once the court has scrutinized it and perhaps recommended, because it's not like the court would look at it and not say anything. Whether it says thumbs up, we want to know about that when they come back, Chairperson, what the court has said on whatever that they would have presented in the court. Would want to know if there are other additions, because remember, we are working under an abnormal situation. Also yourselves, now there is a gun on your head. You might have done something wrong. The court will tell you that this one is not supposed to do it like this. Please take us into confidence on the matters that the court would have raised on that report that you are, you'll be submitting quarterly. The report that you'll be submitting quarterly after the court has said something on it, because as much as it's our report also, but it's a report that is monitored by the court. So we are expecting you to give us the details. So I think in the next report, Chairperson, that they will be presenting in the portfolio committee, maybe a week after. I don't think next week they will be presenting, because we are moving out. There is a lot that will be happening. When we come back, I'm sure in we are coming back in August. Then when we come back in August, you will be expecting that at least the report that you will be presenting will be more detailed in terms of what the court has said. We want to know what the court would have said about the report that we are presenting, because also it makes our work easier to move forward, that these are the issues that would have not been accepted, or these issues are really accepted or otherwise. But to say now, Chairperson, that this report will be exactly as what is in the court, Chairperson, no, it can't be. It cannot be exactly that. This is a progress report to the committee. The affidavits and everything that are presented in that report, I don't think really. I wouldn't even want us to put the gun now on their heads to say this is exactly the report that is going to be presented to court tomorrow. We'll also be doing that, Chairperson. We'll be putting a gun on their heads, and when they come back, if it's not like that, again we will be shouting to say it's not exactly what you said in the portfolio committee. Thank you, Chair.
Of course, my understanding is that an affidavit is something that you are really sworn to say, I so-and-so do this, but I don't think we expected, that is not an affidavit to us. It's an affidavit to the court. So it's the court that will deal with that matter. All we were looking for is the highlights of your compliance, including the compliance that you will be filing to court the minister's documents to court. And also to say we are very keen that the minister complies. All what we are doing aggressively is ensure that us as well, we are hands-on on knowing that at no stage that the minister will not be complying. So our appreciation is that she now has complied, that the report will be filed 3 days earlier than what is expected, instead of you saying Monday or Tuesday, because there was this weekend, that you are ready to respond positively 3 days earlier might also ensure that we're doing some work. On the part of the, as my colleagues have said, part of the judge, it is becoming clear, honorable members, that the judgment was not a witch hunt, was not punishing anyone, was actually encouraging the government to do the right thing. Hence, it has put forward such good people to do this work. They want the work to be done so that justice can not only be done, but seen to be done. So we congratulate the fact that we now have these monitors. And also, they are not replacing this committee. In the near future, we will be inviting the very monitors to come and brief us, because when they have finished this work, they will leave this portfolio committee to continue with the basis that they will have laid during their stay here with their good expertise. We also congratulate them. But I also do believe that the interaction and engagement today in that forum is to really address issues of who is going to chair, how much are they expecting to be paid, and how are they going to do their work. Something that we would also, as members of this committee, would like to hear from them, that this is how we are going to do our work, this is how you will be getting reports, so that in the future is also in your hands, because they are here for a particular time and will leave. And we want that legacy to remain. So I think everything is encouraging, because last meeting we had, the names were so many, and there has not been a shortlisting and a process of saying who these people are. So we are happy now that this matter is really being driven home. And I also believe that members of this portfolio committee will remember that in actually coming to Honorable Mabilo, you will remember that we did not only want that expertise of our own, the SAPO, to be utilized. I remember the debate by Honorable Mhotsi on SAPO. So we also wanted them to play a bank arrangement for loaning our small people in that village. If you want to be involved in food security, they can loan you a certain amount, so that it's not like conduit. You put money in the SAPO, then it goes and pay people, it ends there. So your emphasis on issues of initiating economic development at a village level using their footprint will also be important. This reminds me one last thing, acting DG. We as this committee went to Harry Smith a project that we came across has been visited by the NCOP, and some work was done as a result of the NCOP visit. They had a facility there, and we actually identified their bakery issue, where they had a bakery that is not working properly. And I think it's enough for the minister's discretional fund, or the minister can instruct your NDA to actually provide. I think it's less than 50,000. And they have been sending pictures of the loaves, because we encourage them that because Comrade Honorable Mabilo is talking about a village or a township. They are right in Harrismith. They can supply the Smolanyana BNBs there, or the prison that is there, with bread, because they are doing it so well, but they don't have equipment. And they are already being funded by DSD. However, this program of developing away from hand to mouth, but rather to business-like, so we would want to go back there. But we can't go back there because we have said to those people, the ministry is here represented with us, and they identify these challenges. We would like to have a pilot, because they also produce food security. They have got about 10 hectares or 5 that was donated to them. They have a title deed. Title deed for the land to produce food, and they are feeding people there. There were people who were being fed there. So for us to be able to not to have a lip service as the department and the parliament, we must be able to be seen utilizing some things that we think can be done. So I'm very happy to have been allowed this leeway of you bringing a late report. I also congratulate my leaders I'm working with. It was not my right, it was their right. Thank you so much. Can we then say the meeting is adjourned? Okay. Okay, sorry. Mama Zobe, you can leave. I know where you're going.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Just some of the responses. The corporate bank account, any procurement that we have to do has to follow due process. So there isn't a bank. We have not yet identified the bank or the banks, but it is, we're going through a procurement process, the same as with any other service that we want. The misinformation that is in the social media around the expiry of the SASSA card is something that we are addressing. The response to anybody who asks you that is that the current SASSA card will continue to work even if it goes beyond that expiry date. If there is any change, then SASSA will communicate very broadly for people on how and where they need to make those changes to the cards. But at this stage, there's absolutely no need for anybody to panic. The current SASSA card will continue to work. And that message on social media that says people need to come in 90 days before the end of December is absolute misinformation. It is inaccurate. And we need to try and correct that.
Let's follow up on that. Remember, Chairperson, in the last meeting, we said anything that they need to communicate, they must communicate it with their beneficiaries, like they did just before the expiry of the, sorry, just before the end of the financial year. So if social media is saying it's making people to be afraid of whatever that is happening, then you need to do exactly what you did. Communicate to the beneficiaries, whether through print media or through whatever type of a media, so that beneficiaries can be able to know that SASSA is talking to us. If you just leave it like that, you'll have a problem. Communicate with them.
Maybe even through your payment sites that you said, your next, in the past, we had a very good message that next you will get your next on that particular date. You can still continue to say the card that you are currently using now, you will only be informed by us if there's a change. you can always do it like that. That communication was excellent. Any more that was not responded to?
Just a note, have taken note of all of the comments made by the committee, and it would certainly be addressed in the next report.
The chair of the committee, do you have now?
We don't have. In fact, the committee, the panel of experts is led by the Auditor General. I'm quite sure in their inaugural meeting, which is today, they would be electing a chair and setting out the processes. So we would make that part of the next progress report. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. In fact, Chairperson, even the communication to us, it comes from Auditor General, AG. So I think going forward, we'll then have more information that we'll share with the committee.
Okay. Sure.
Thank you. Do any members feeling that their questions have not been answered, I'm ready to say they should. Okay. Now the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much for attending. Thank you so much.